Welcome to today's SNEB webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB, and today's webinar was organized by the Division of International Nutrition Education, along with the Food and Nutrition Extension Division. Both of those divisions have acronyms in SNEB, so that's DINE and FNEE. And the webinar is celebrating the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. So a little housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, you'll see the three handouts from our presenters. So you are welcome to download those and follow along with today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the presentation. So please type those in the question block so we can moderate those to our presenters. When I close out the webinar today, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. And then watch for an email, probably by the Friday of this week, with a link to the handouts, the recording, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So I'd like to introduce our moderator. Constance Gaywa is the Associate Professor at George Mason University.
Thank you, Rachel. The UN General Assembly designated 2021 the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. This designation gives us a unique opportunity to raise awareness on the importance of fruits and vegetables in human nutrition, food security and health, and in achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals. This webinar, as Rachel mentioned, is one of the many events being conducted around the world to support this effort. We are joined by three speakers, Dr. Yenori Hernandez, Dr. Taylor Wallace, and Ms. Sally Sampson, who will discuss the importance of the FAO's designation, highlight fruit and vegetable consumption patterns, and discuss challenges and opportunities and strategies to promote consumption of fruits and vegetables among different communities around the world. Our presentation will first start with Dr. Hernandez, followed by Taylor Wallace, and lastly by Sally Sampson, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers session. I will introduce Dr. Hernandez. Dr. Hernandez is a nutrition and food systems specialist at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. She has a strong academic background in nutrition public health, nutrition education, and program evaluation. She has been deeply involved for over 10 years in research, extension, and program management, and academic projects in the area of promoting healthy diets in the US and in more than 20 low and middle income countries. Today, she will discuss the importance of the designation of 2021 as the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables with us. Welcome, Dr. Hernandez.
Thank you, Constance, and good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're doing very well. I'm very happy and honored to be part of this webinar. Today, as Constance said, I will talk about the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. And the way of how I'm going to organize this presentation, let me see if you can see my slides so that I can move them. Yep. Okay, so this conversation or presentation will be organized in three main areas. The first one is we will briefly analyze the why of this celebration of the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. The second part, I promise it will be a bit more exciting, as I will try to share the key messages of this initiative and link them with our wonderful work in nutrition education. And finally, I will share with you some activities and examples of how to actively participate in this global effort. Okay, so let's go to the first section. The first section, as I said, is the why. As you know, when we think about healthy eating, the first foods that come to our mind are fruits and vegetables, right? We know that they provide important nutrients and vitamins that are essential for human health. And as high-value crops, they have great income-generating potential as well. They also benefit the entire food system, and they have this potential to contribute to several sustainable development goals. In summary, the benefits of consuming fruits and vegetables are well-known, are countless, and this is one of the reasons of why we, as FAO, I started this organization of the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. As you can see in the following slide, this year, the 2021, has been designated by the UN General Assembly as the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. We strongly believe that this is a unique opportunity to raise awareness on the important role of fruits and vegetables on human nutrition, food security and health, as well as I said before, in the achievement of multiple UN Sustainable Development Goals. Now, what I would like to highlight is that FAO, which stands as the Food Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, is the lead agency for celebrating this event, of course, in collaboration with other relevant organizations, institutions, and bodies of the UN, United Nations systems. In fact, last year, in December, our FAO Director General launched this initiative. And one of the major outputs that was highlighted as part of this initiative was this background paper that I'm showing you in this slide. What is this background paper about? Well, it outlines the benefits of fruits and vegetable consumption, but also examines the various aspects of the fruits and vegetable sector from a food system point of view, to identify how different actors can interact and some key issues or actions that can be considered to take into real action during this International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. Okay, in the next slide, I want to show you the specific objectives of this event. Basically, are along the lines of promoting, raising, reducing, sharing, and let's take a look to promoting what? We are trying to promote a diversified, balanced, and healthy diets and lifestyles through fruits and vegetable consumptions. We are promoting raising awareness and directing policy attention to the nutrition and health benefits of fruits and vegetables. Reducing losses and waste in fruits and vegetables. And finally, sharing best practices for fruits and vegetables. This is exactly what we're trying to do in this type of events, like this webinar. Now, what are some of the key facts that we would like to highlight in a year like this one? Well, first, from a health perspective, it is important to highlight the following. Worldwide, we consume first less fruits and vegetables than the minimum recommendation of 400 grams recommended by the World Health Organization for a healthy diet. On average, in fact, we consume only about 2/3 of these minimum recommendations. And then the consumption varies significantly across the different regions of the world. For example, people in Central Asia, North Africa, and Middle East consume slightly more than the recommended minimum, while those in Sub-Saharan Africa or in Oceania consume only about 1/3 of this. Another fact is that people that live in the Caribbean are the ones that consume most fruit, while those that live in Southern Africa are the ones that consume the least. Now, in 2017, we learned that some 3 million deaths worldwide were significantly associated to not eating enough fruits and vegetables. So we definitely have a problem here. Now, from an environmental perspective, did you know that it can take up to 5 liters of water to just produce an orange? And how much fruits and vegetables are lost between harvest, death, and consumption? There is up to 50% what we know right now that is being lost. So we really need to be very mindful, not only about our consumption of fruits and vegetables, but how they're produced and distributed, packaged along the food system, because this is really damaging our natural resources. And finally, from an optimistic perspective, what have we learned from COVID? Well, from COVID, what we have learned is that short and inclusive value change, including the ones for fruits and vegetables, have been very beneficial to provide better market opportunities for family farmers. So with these key facts, I want to finish this first section to start with the second section. Okay. So moving to the next section, I'm going to share with you the key 5 messages of these initiatives, and I'm going to link them with our nutritional education work. But before we navigate into these messages, I would like to invite you to think like children and delve into their way of learning so that we can understand from the eyes of children, from the point of view of children, the importance of adding more fruits and vegetables, more color to our plates. Okay, so To start this, the question that I have is, what is the goal? What do we want to achieve in terms of fruits and vegetable consumption? And our goal is this one. When we talk about children and fruits and vegetables, what we want is to commit ourselves so that we ensure that we have a new generation of children who can learn to love and enjoy fruits and vegetables, but be also agents of change in their local food systems, in their local food environments. We want to see a rainbow, like full of fruits and vegetables, full of colors. And now I want to invite you to take a look to the logo of this International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. Right before starting this presentation, they were saying that the colors are very beautiful. Well, yes, they are the colors of the rainbow, but they're also the colors of the different sustainable development goals. And why is this? Because with fruits and vegetables, we can get a lot of benefits from a nutritional health point of view, but we can go beyond that and we can tackle different sustainable development goals. So let's use the colors of this logo to start highlighting the key messages that we recommend you to share all over the world for this International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. Let's start with the color red. Okay, what do we generally think when we see the color red? We think about heart health, we think about heart, love, and this is the message that my son Gabriel is trying to represent here with this watermelon where he cut the shape of a heart. So in addition to the multiple health benefits that fruits and vegetables give us, their intense colors, their different shapes, their different textures make children enjoy and create family moments. And this is what you can see in this picture where my son Gabriel, he feels very self-confident that he's cooking with different vegetables. And of course, his beloved grandfather is very proud because he's cooking with his grandson and they are using the different vegetables and fruits that they can take from their home garden. Now let's move into the color, the color green. Of course, when we see color green, it makes us connect immediately with nature. And that's exactly what we want to reflect. When we connect our kids with nature through school gardens, when they visit farmers or the local farmers market, they have this surprise of, wow, what is this? This is growing. They really appreciate and respect food more and more from farm to table. And now let's move into the color orange. The color orange reflects prosperity. And in this case, the message that I would like to show, share with you is that when we talk about fruits and vegetables, these are the superfoods that promote growing prosperity. And nowadays, this is very important, especially with COVID, where waste is not an option and where we need to find the options to help farmers sell their food products. So this is exactly what we try to encourage Gabriel, even though that he's very young, every weekend, he checks what is in our fridge in terms of fruits and vegetables. He makes the list and then he goes to the farmer's market very proud to buy what is needed. So he supports the farmer and we avoid food loss in our home. Then let's move into color yellow. Color yellow actually reflects innovation and creativity. And this is exactly what we are showing in these pictures here. In one hand, we have my son, Gabriel, that he is shredding the carrot. He feels very self-confident. So here we are promoting skills, life skills, beyond just eating fruits and vegetables. And in the other one, it was experience prior. I was working with FAO. It was a farm to school experience where kids are like finding solutions for different conflicts. They're working together as a team. So again, in here, we're giving the ingredients for kids not only to prepare beautiful and colorful salads, but those ingredients to be self-competent and gain life skills that are necessary to contribute to the different sustainable development goals. And I want to finalize this section with the color blue. Color blue or purple, like the ones of the blueberries. Blue is the symbol of alliance, the same of the rainbow. And the idea here is that we want to foster diversity and sustainability. And as a matter of fact, our planet is blue. So with fruits and vegetables, we want to provide to our children a type of education that not only demands where they can demand their right for adequate and healthy foods, but also when they can become more aware that each of their food choices has implications in the planet. So here again is looking more into responsible consumption and responsible production. With these key messages that you can translate into your own context, I did it for my home context and also for one area of work that I'm very passionate to work with FAO, which is schools, food and nutrition education. I would like to finalize my second section to go to the final one. The final one is, how can you be part of this event? Well, we have a website. In this website, we have different resources, like, for example, the background paper that I shared with you. We have a communication toolkit, some ideas of how you can showcase this campaign in events like this ones, in the farmers markets. How can you, for example, be in contact with those people that are influencers so that they can help us disseminate these messages? So there are plenty ideas. Actually, there is a website where you can go and insert, if you're going to have an event in your community, you can put that and it will show up in the world map that FAO is recording all these efforts. And finally, as I said, you can do from raise awareness and knowledge products, capacity development. There is a lot to do, but most importantly is that we join efforts, and like with the color blue, we show like these synergies to promote the importance of fruits and vegetables. I want to finalize with this video so that we can all get inspired of the importance of fruits and vegetables. So here we go, and thank you very much for this great opportunity.
Bright, delicious, lush, nutritious. We come in all shapes and sizes, colors and shades, raw or cooked, sweet or bitter, soft, crunchy, fragrant, pungent. All of us unique and special, full of fiber, vitamins and minerals, history, culture and traditions. We don't just fill your plate, we fill your stories and memories. Long and short, slim and plump, sometimes awkward or misshapen, forgotten or neglected, but never ever ugly, whatever people say. Because we're what really makes you tick, what makes your eyes sparkle and your smile dazzle. We are fruits and vegetables, simply beautiful.
Okay, so that'll be it from my side, and let's celebrate this party of putting a lot of colors in our plates, fruits and vegetables, but most importantly, with all these efforts that you can do during this year, how to make possible that fruits and vegetables are the best option, and the option that especially low-income families can have in their plates in a daily basis. So we need a whole food system transformation. So thank you very much, Constance, and everybody for this great opportunity.
Thank you, Yenari. Please, if you have any questions or comments after Yenari's presentation, please include the questions and in the question section. And now I'm going to introduce Dr. Wallace. Wilka Wallace is the principal and CEO of the Think Healthy Group. He's a professor in the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies at George Mason University and the Chief Food and Nutrition Science Officer at the Produce for Better Health Foundation. His academic research interests are in the area of nutritional interventions to promote health and prevent the onset of chronic diseases. Today, he will discuss current patterns and determinants of fruit and vegetables consumption amongst different communities around the world. Welcome, Dr. Wallace.
Thank you, Dr. Giwa, and thank you to the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior for having me here today to talk about increasing fruit and vegetable consumption. So just to give you a little overview of my presentation, I'm first going to go into some data that you've probably seen from our dietary guidelines that, you know, really display here in the U.S. how large the fruit and vegetable gap actually is. Then I'm going to get into some of the Produce for Better Health Foundation's more complementary data where they dig down deeper and they say, you know, why are fruit and vegetable intakes decreasing in the United States? We're going to go into a little bit of my research where we're starting to look at different types of foods that we have deemed as carrier foods that could potentially help increase fruit and vegetable intake. And then I want to get into, you know, something that I've been really excited about, which is these high-tech greenhouses. So these are just my conflicts of interest. I have taken money, of course, from the Produce for Better Health Foundation for acting as their chief food and nutrition science officer. All of my conflicts of interest are listed on my website, drtaylorwallace.com. So from our 2020 dietary guidelines, we know that in the U.S., people aren't consuming how they're supposed to be consuming. You can see the Healthy Eating Index 2015 scores haven't really changed over time for the general population. And we see that ages, those teenage years, particularly age 14 to 18, they have the lowest Healthy Eating Index score. And when I used to be the senior scientist at the National Osteoporosis Foundation, this was really a huge issue for me because, you know, as you all probably know, peak bone mass develops by the time you're about 20 years old at the hip. You've got pretty much all of peak bone mass by your mid to late 20s. And so we're setting, in particular, teenage girls up for a very hard time by not ensuring they have the most optimal healthy eating index compared to the rest of the population. If you look at the tails, ages 2 to 4, ages 60 plus, this is where I really feel that policy interventions are most effective. If you think of our different SNAP, WIC, national school lunch programs, programs focused towards the elderly and in nursing homes, this is where nutrition policy, I think, can probably become most effective and why these scores are higher.
Dr. Wallace, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're not seeing your screen. Okay. Oh, now we are. If you want to make that a presentation, perfect. That, yeah, I was going to say, go ahead and.
Okay. So these are the numbers that I just showed you. You can see to the left how the Healthy Eating Index scores haven't changed over time.
Go ahead and hit play from the current slide because it's a little difficult to see.
I had hit play from the current slide.
Because we're still seeing the PowerPoint and not, do you have more than one screen? Do you need to change?
Can you see it like this? Can you see the intro slide?
Yeah, we see the PowerPoint slides along the side and then the single side in the middle.
I'll click through them like this if that's okay.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, is there a way to make that a little bigger?
I don't know what the technology is right now.
Okay.
Let's just close and. Okay. So can you see the fruit and vegetable gap slide now?
Yes, we can. And just to remind everyone, the slides are in the handout if you want to download those.
So apologies for that. I'm not sure what's going on. But you can see the Healthy Eating Index scores on this slide. This is another figure from our dietary guidelines where we basically show that every category of vegetables and as well as fruits are underconsumed. Vegetables are underconsumed by about 90% of individuals in the U.S., whereas fruits are underconsumed by about 80% of individuals. In the U.S., we get about half of our recommended intake of fruits and vegetables. And you can find more resources on choosemyplate.gov from the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion. Our friends there do a great job at helping health professionals better communicate nutrition. This is a slide that I put together. It's quite old, but it does a really good job at looking at bioactives and showing the bioactive gap because of the large gap between intake and recommendations for fruits and vegetables. And it really highlights the different bioactives that you should be having in your diet based upon their color, just like in Dr. Fernandez's presentation. So for example, if you were to eat according to the dietary guidelines, so you get your 5-a-day fruits and vegetables, you would have a prudent intake of about 6,621 milligrams of the carotenoid or bioactive lycopene. And you can see that, you know, depending on your age range, very large portions of the U.S. are not getting their what we call prudent intake of this bioactive compound. Now, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Working Group has begun creating a clinical guideline on the first set of bioactives, which are the flavanthriols, and I've had the opportunity to be a part of that group for the last year. So this will be the first clinical guideline around bioactives. You know, we often publish dietary reference intakes or different clinical guidelines around vitamin, mineral, and other essential nutrients, but we haven't yet gone there, at least in the U.S., in regard to bioactives. So our working group is considering randomized controlled trials of cardiovascular disease biomarkers and prospective cohort studies of cardiovascular disease outcomes. And you can see to the right of your screen, this isn't something that is a new idea. In fact, China has been publishing DRI-like values called specific proposed levels. It's very reflective of an adequate intake for several types of dietary bioactives for almost a decade now. This data now shows you PBH's state of the plate. So we do a bigger dig into why fruit and vegetable intakes are decreasing. And as you can see on your screen, fruit and vegetable intake has decreased by 9% since 2004. And 3% since 2015. Now, why is this? It's because vegetables have taken a very big decline, and this is in part due to fewer side salads being served at restaurants and at home, which we know provide a lot of different types of vegetables. Now, in good news, fruit intake has increased 10% since 2004 and 3% since 2015. Usually juice is also reflected within fruit intake, but we have seen juice decline in the past few years quite substantially, and that's probably due to a lot of messaging about the natural sugar that is contained within juice. So since 2015, excluding juice, fruit has experienced slight increases in net consumption frequency. You can see top growing fruits include bananas, grapes, and blueberries. You'll see a decline in raisins, mixed fruit, peaches. And on the vegetable side, you'll see pretty much the only ones that are growing are potatoes. And that includes potato chips and french fries, so very reflective of diet quality. And you also see Caesar salads growing a bit. But if you look at the top vegetables consumed by frequency, lettuce and vegetable salads. And if you look at most of the ones that are declining, tomatoes, lettuce, carrots, all things that you would see on these side salad dishes. And we also know that the total number of vegetable eating occasions has been declining. And again, that represents fewer side dishes at restaurants, as well as fewer side salads at restaurants and in general. What's really interesting about fruit and the increased consumption, it has a wide appeal. Consumption is somewhat balanced throughout the day, with the exception of appetizers, which represents a growth opportunity for fruit. And then finally, most Americans already know that fruits and vegetables support health and well-being, and yet knowledge alone does not yield new fruit and vegetable consumption behaviors. So we really have to discuss as an educational group how we can engage people to lean in and really start to do what they already know they should be doing. Over half of adults, according to PBH's research, are making a conscious effort to increase fruit and vegetable intake. But barriers include finding new menu items, staying within budget, planning healthy meals, and finding meals quickly. And if you see under fruit and vegetable, you'll see it was quick, easy to make or get as being one of the top motivators. So some similarities there. And all this data can be found at the link that you see below on fruitsandveggies.org, and there's a lot more expanded text. Now, one of our other things we've done with the Produce for Better Health Foundation this last year is we really took a deep dive into the scientific evidence. And so we did a comprehensive narrative umbrella review of the science around fruit and vegetable intake. And so if you look this article up, don't print it, it's like 200 pages. We reviewed pretty much every chronic disease known and its effect, the effects of fruit and vegetable intake. We found strong evidence to provide public health recommendations to increase fruit and vegetable consumption. We also found that fruits and vegetables likely have the strongest effects in relation to cardiovascular disease prevention and treatment. But the threshold effect is about 800 grams or 5 servings a day. So if you think about that, we're halfway there. If we can get people to consume just a little more fruit and vegetable, we could really prevent some of these long-term chronic diseases, particularly cardiovascular disease. And the review did find that certain fruits and vegetables, particularly cruciferous vegetables, dark green leafy vegetables, citrus fruits, and dark colored berries have superior effects in relation to disease prevention. So this was published last year by 14 different scientists across the US, and it stands as PBH's backing for their policy platform here in the US and internationally. Now, I want to move and just talk very briefly on some of our new research from my lab that's not related to PBH. We had a small grant from the Sabra Dipping Company that makes Sabra hummus, and we've started to explore what I'm like terming as carrier foods. And so basically what we showed is that increased chickpea and hummus consumption is associated with higher intakes of fruits, total and dark green vegetables, total protein foods, whole grains, and lower intakes of meats and added sugars. And you can see to the right of your screen, particularly hummus has been increasing over the past decade quite substantially. And this is also demonstrated by a rise in these vegetable intakes and these whole grain intakes, because, you know, what do you dip your hummus in? Obviously, celery, carrots, whole grain pita, things like that. And what we really show is when you really dig deep down into the data, hummus consumption increases these food groups, but it decreases the intakes of meat and added sugars, particularly those consumed on snacking occasions. So some really interesting preliminary data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. And then I'll move to just something that I've been really passionate about over the last couple of weeks. This is a picture of Kentucky Farm Fresh, which is a high-tech greenhouse. I think this is really the next generation of ag. And if you remember from Dr. Hernandez's presentation that 5 liters of water to produce one orange, these greenhouses can give just the exact ample amounts of nutrients, of water, of all everything needed to produce and maximize crop productivity. They're carbon neutral. They usually run off of solar panels and other types of wind energy. They're local, so they cut down on transportation costs, and it's fresh. No more of those nasty tomatoes that you get from the grocery store that have no flavor. These are packed full of it. And so hopefully, or at least my guess is, in the next 2 years, as these greenhouses get going and get popular, you're going to see a lot of increased intakes of certain fruits and vegetables because they're local, they taste good, you know, they donate a lot to the school systems around these greenhouse facilities. So it's big ag to the next generation. And then finally, I'll put a plug in for the Produce for Better Health Foundation's advocacy campaign. It's called Have a Plant. You can go to fruitsandveggies.org and take the pledge to add one or more fruits and vegetables to your daily routine. You can spread the word. We've got a lot of infographics and things you can use on your social media. And every week there's a chance to win a prize for signing up and participating. So go make the pledge, and I'll be happy to answer any questions in the Q&A session.
Thank you, Dr. Wallace, for a very informative presentation. Please, if you have any questions for Dr. Wallace, please write them or type them in the question section. I'd like now to introduce Sally Sampson, our third presenter. Sally is the founder and president of Chop Chop Family Incorporated. Chop Chop is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to inspire and teach children and their families to cook and eat real food together. Ms. Sampson is also the author and co-author of multiple cookbooks, including Chop Chop, The Kid's Guide to Cooking Real Food with Your Family, The Olive Table, The $50 Dinner Party, and Souped Up, to name a few. She's also a contributor to multiple newspapers and magazines. Sally will share the strategies that she has applied in promoting fruits and vegetables consumption amongst families in the U.S. Communities. Thank you. Welcome, Sally.
Thank you so much. I am thrilled to be here with this group. Thank you so much for having me. First, I just have to ask, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm Sally Sampson. I'm the founder of Chop Chop Family. I'm just going to give you a little background on who we are. So we are the publishers primarily of this magazine called Chop Chop, the fun cooking magazine for families. It came out of an idea I had, which was originally to get doctors to prescribe cooking during well child visits. The idea was that you could get kids to improve their own health by cooking. So we started this magazine, which is distributed in doctor's offices, but also, also in Indian reservation schools, after schools, basically wherever you find children. So this is our summer issue. So instead of telling you about what we do, I'm actually going to walk through the magazine with you, which is a tool that can be used with families. We're primarily focused on children 5 to 12, but we really do start at 2. So here's a typical cover for us. Just to let you know, this is not a model. He is a real child. And everything we do, we use real children. So let's see. So this is the typical issue. You see on the left, quick bites. So the idea of this is, we're, as you'll see through the magazine, we are really focused on fruits and vegetables. And we believe that not only is this the way to increase fruit and vegetable consumption, but also we teach math, science, reading, financial literacy. We look at everything through the lens of cooking. So what you see on the left are what we call quick bites. And these are, they range from things that you might think about to things that you really wouldn't have thought about. So something like frozen peach slices is sort of it's like a cross between ice cream and a fresh peach at this time of year. This is our table of contents where we have all these columns in addition to recipes. So I'll just go through it as you see it in the, I'm not seeing how to advance. Are you all there?
Yes, we are here, Sally.
Yeah, I'm not for some reason I can't advance my presentation.
Just put your mouse on the screen and click the screen. And it should do it.
The green.
Just click anywhere.
It's not moving. Hmm. I can't, it's like frozen or something. I'm gonna get out of it and then get back in. I'm sorry, I can't advance it. Well, I'll just
Sally, it's Rachel. I have the magazine up on my screen. Hang on a second and let me switch over to be presenter.
Okay.
Clear some things off of here. Are you able to see that now?
I am not. I'm sort of frozen, I guess. Okay, I see it. I got it. I can see it now.
Okay.
So let's see. I'll just start here, okay? So in each issue, what you see is the learning guide. So there's certain things that we do. We specify hands-on time, total time, how much something makes, and we have this in every issue. Plus we have learned the lingo. So we use, for the most part, we don't use a lot of cooking lingo, particularly since we're focused on children, but we also do want to teach as we're going through. So we have this learn the lingo in every issue. And, you know, even something as simple as this, you can do outside of a kitchen. You can just talk to a child. What do these things mean? When would they use them? And then you see in every issue, we have skills. So in this one, it's how to use a can opener, how to cook grains. These, to anyone who cooks all the time, these seem like very simple skills. But if you're 5 years old and you've never used a can opener, this is really an important thing to go through and to be taught. And then same thing, how to cook grains. These repeat depending on the recipes in the issue. So Rachel, can you advance? Okay, here. This is what we call Chop Chop Junior. This is always a recipe that's really a visual recipe. So you don't have to speak English to know what to do. You also don't know how to you don't have to know how to read. These range from things like putting hummus on a rice cake or dipping hummus, you know, using a carrot, like Taylor talked about, as a carrier to use hummus. And the models, again, this is she's three. So these are always going to be a child under 5 years old. And one of the things that's really important to us is that, as you'll see through the magazine, that children of any size, any color, can see themselves in the magazine. So can you advance? And then here, again, you know, it's something that you can make on your own, that these are both two things that you might or normally buy. Homemade salad dressing is incredibly easy to make. And I can't tell you how many people have told me that, you know, these are like grown-ups in offices who say, now I make my own salad dressing, I leave it in my drawer at work so that when I order a salad, I'm not eating something that's kind of junky. You know, instead I'm using something that's very clean. And you see below where it says get creative, we have the very basic salad dressing, and then here are things you can add to make it more what you would like. On the left, you see edible vocabulary. This is something that we do a lot, where we, what is a crouton? So this comes from the word, from a French word, and it means little crust. So wherever we can educate in a way that doesn't feel like school, we do that. So can you advance? Then here, this is just, I will just say, one of my favorite kinds of interactions, where you see the 4-year-old and the 14-year-old. The 4-year-old looks at the 14-year-old and is very much like, if she's going to do this thing, then it's very cool. She's neither child nor adult. And We have a lot of this in Chop Chop. We at first didn't have older kids like Taylor, but Taylor was, we just see this kind of magic that happens all the time. So then again, here we have kitchen science. This can run from what is fermentation to what makes vinegar sour to really anything. What is the science behind things? We did a course on cooking and science at Harvard a couple of years ago, and we found that the kids who were really interested in science and maybe not so much cooking walked out now really interested in cooking, and vice versa. So that's something that's really important to us, is to bring everyone in through whatever door. Health Nuts is a recurring column. This is, we have a kids advisory board. So we have between 6 and 8 kids a year who test recipes for us. They weigh in on what we're doing. So if the board, the kids advisory board, doesn't think we're doing something well, we don't keep doing it. And one of the board members now is, does this cartoon for us in each issue, and that's just super fun. He's amazingly clever. He's like 14. Can you go ahead? Oh, keep going. Okay. This is a new column which is called Yes You Can. You know, we started out not using a lot of canned ingredients, but this is something where we got feedback that a lot of the audience wants canned ingredients and how to cook with them. And so in every issue we have Yes You Can. So that's just sort of fun. And, you know, how do you integrate it? How do you, in this case, we're using it with fresh kale. So let's keep going. This is called What's Different. As you can see, basically all fruits and vegetables. You know, what is different between the two pages? Kids really love this. I have to say, an enormous amount of adults come to me very proud that they got the answers. Can you go ahead? Not a whole lot to say about this. So since I'm sort of running out of time, let's just keep going. This is a new column, and this is a column that I love. So I think it is really important to teach financial literacy. We've been doing this for a couple of years, but certainly the pandemic has shown us that it's really important to understand math and finance. And again, we look at it through food. So the idea is basically send the kid to a grocery store, either actually or not actually, and have them figure out what would things cost. This is a really important skill. And we are making it fun. And so a kid will be learning this as they're cooking. We love this. Here, this is a column that is in every issue. We pick one ingredient and sort of do everything you can think of with it. So this is everything peach, which of course is just an incredible thing this time of year. We tend to do about 4 recipes that utilize the ingredient, but as you see, we define the different kinds of peaches, we have facts, we have different things that you know, the world produces roughly 55 billion pounds of peaches and nectarines a year. Archaeologists have found peach fossils in China that are 2.6 million years old. So we try to integrate a lot of fun with it. And on the right, you see what flavors go well with peaches. We do that every time. So this is another way to sort of, everything we can think of that's interesting about a peach would be in this section. So this tends to be about 6 pages. Can you proceed? So here, we can go through this fast. This is just peach recipes, more peach recipes. And then this is also here, we have on the left, we're introducing an ingredient. This is not a fruit or vegetables, but often it is. What is it? People don't necessarily know what is old-fashioned oats. And then you see on the right, this is really about going to the library. So this is not the newest, hottest book necessarily. We try to keep the theme of peaches. We don't always, but these are books we want to encourage reading. And then here, more peaches, we can keep going. And then here on the left, actually, we're not including this visual anymore because it has so many brands in it. And we work a lot with the USDA and they don't want to see all these brands, but we will continue. This page is really helpful because it's what do you need to have in the kitchen, in your kitchen, as essential ingredients, but also what is the specific shopping list for this issue. Then we can just go fast. We have a couple of games in each issue. And then here are the answers to everything. This is also a really favorite section, which is kids write in. My favorite was a kid wrote in and said, I told my mother I would give her $1 million if we could roast carrots. So, you know, I do really think that cooking does really inspire kids to eat more fruits and vegetables. There's a lot of evidence that when they're cooking themselves, they want to share it, very much like putting a, like one of these, putting artwork on the fridge. Kids want to share it. We see that all the time. Mommy, mommy, taste what I made. So keep going. And then this is just about who we are. These are some of the people that we work with. And then the back page, we have a newsletter that is monthly, that's free, that kids can sign up for. We started this during COVID because we felt that there were a lot of pantry items that people didn't necessarily know how to use. So this is a really great resource. Feel free to sign up for it. Then the next slide, I won't really talk about much, but we also have these kitchen activity cards that are for 2+. This uses one ingredient. I would say 90% of them are fruits and vegetables, sort of what to do with it. There's a sensory. Again, this is the visual equation. And then there's touch, smell, feel, move that are associated with this. I know we're running out of time and you all have questions, so I will stop, but I will just say that you have an entire issue here, but if you would like to see one physically, please feel free to reach out to me, sally@chopchopfamily.org. And thank you so much for letting me go through this. I hope it was helpful.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you all to all our presenters for very informative and interesting presentations. And now we open it up for questions and comments. So let me see if we have any questions. Please feel free to share your questions in the questions link. I don't see any questions posted yet, unless I'm missing them on my end.
I did just see something pop in that said, Taylor or Sally, do you have any international activities?
This is Sally. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
One thing I should say is that the magazine is in English and in Spanish. And we can translate it into any language. We are in every state, and we do have subscriptions in 23 or 24 countries.
And I'll say that the Produce for Better Health Foundation is a US-based national organization, but we are currently talking through what our international strategy might be upon expanding.
And then I see a comment that says, since there's a lot of extension people here, Chop Chop issues make great SNAP ed incentives.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Tashia has noted that you shared your presentations with colleagues in Malawi, where she lives. And she loves all the three presentations. Thank you, Tashia. Very impressive for everybody. There's a question from Sarah. Sally, you mentioned that you work with children on the Chop Chop Advisory Board, but can you talk about other ways you connect with the kids and families that receive your magazine? Are there ways for kids and families to connect with each other?
We have the newsletter, but we also have a cooking club where it's chopchopcookingclub.org, where kids can sign up and they do like one recipe and they don't advance actually until they've done that and sent us a picture, and kids can connect there. Certainly kids can write to us and we will put their what they've written to us in the magazine. We did have cooking classes before the pandemic. We shut that down. And we are looking at doing Zoom cooking classes. So also, if you have any ideas on how you think we could do what you're looking for, feel free to write to me.
Thank you, Sally. And Sharon, thank you for the feedback we just got from one of the youth on the Agriculture Nutrition Group in Malawi. The slides are easy to follow and interesting. They've learned a lot. Hashtag raising a generation that loves fruits and vegetables. Thank you, Sally. Thank you, Stasia, for the feedback. All right. As we are waiting other questions, I do have a question from Dr. Wallace. For Dr. Wallace, you talked about the greenhouses and how that can help, you know, the new agriculture and how the direction we should be moving towards improving agricultural production. How do you see this being applied in low and middle income nations?
That's an excellent question. And I was actually just on the phone 2 days ago. We have a very large randomized control trial of malnourished 6-month-old infants in the mountains of Guatemala. It's an indigenous Mayan population. And it's a perfect opportunity. For instance, right now is their rainy season, and they have a very hard time with agriculture because the weather drops, not drastically, but it's probably in the 50s right now, 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And it rains all the time. And we have preliminary data from a garden study that the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics conducted down there, really showing that teaching people how to garden and installing community gardens can decrease the incidence of stunting. And so now our study is a lot larger of a study, and we're looking at cognition as the primary outcome. But there is definitely room, and it would be an absolute dream to get one of these greenhouses down there, because it's a sustainable solution, right? It's year-round crop production to an area that's isolated that otherwise would not get fresh produce for most of the year.
Thank you, Taylor. Yenari, would you be in a position to maybe comment on some of these strategies in being applied in low and middle income nations, and where the FAO stands in promoting some of these initiatives?
Well, FAO, as the organization that works with food, agriculture, nutrition, we work in different parts of the world in areas where we can promote a sustainable production and consumption of fruits and vegetables. So, for example, just to give a concrete example, here in Latin America and the Caribbean region, especially nowadays with these celebration of the International Year of Fruits and Vegetables, we see a lot of events that aim to raise the awareness of fruits and vegetables and involve different stakeholders, from policymakers, from technical, from consumers, because we want to insert this chip of the importance of fruits and vegetables, but not only, as I said during my presentation, to showcase the nutritional health benefits, but also the potential to support the different actors along the food system. So that's one line of action that for us is very important, the awareness, that policy, also advocacy. There is also a lot of knowledge products. That is one of the areas of work that we also do. As I said, we have the background paper where it showcases a lot of theory and evidence of the benefits of fruits and vegetables, but also what are those key actions that we recommend countries to undertake in order to ensure a sustainable consumption and production of fruits and vegetables. And then also from a production side, to be honest, that's not my area of expertise, but definitely in the field, there is a lot of work with farmers, with family farmers, for example, to, as I said, how they can produce in a more sustainable way. So right now, all the actions they are promoting as a cross-cutting team, the prevention of food loss and waste. Also, another key action that they are doing is how to, just like in the US with the farm to school programs, how to connect or how to empower the family farmers so that they can procure to schools that there are different products, including fruits and vegetables. And not only that, also how school meals can be a learning laboratory for children to learn and appreciate fruits and vegetables and complement that, for example, with the school gardens and how to insert nutritional education within the classroom or beyond the classroom. There is a lot of training courses that we're doing with teachers currently with the cooperation of FAO and the Brazilian government. There is a very big online training for teachers and technical staff from school feeding programs from Guatemala, Peru, Ecuador, Chile. So the efforts are very wide. And as I presented in my last slide, they are along the lines of raising awareness, policy advocacy, creation of knowledge, products, capacity development, so that at the end of the day, the efforts that are going to be put in the country at country level, they are effective and also sustainable within the realities of the different countries.
Thank you so much, Yenari. So that is the last question that we've going to look at now. And I think this brings us to the end of the webinar. And again, I want to thank the presenters and each of the attendees who took the time to join us as well. And back to Rachel.
Thank you. Excellent presentation. Just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close the webinar, and then you'll get an email by Friday of this week with a link to the recording, the handouts, and your CEU certificate. And then just a reminder, so registration is open for SNEB's virtual annual conference, August 8th through the 10th. Then we're also doing 2 days of a deep dive session in New Orleans, August 26th and 27th. So registration for both those events is open as well. Additionally, each of the divisions have a meeting scheduled the week prior to conference, and those division meetings are open to anyone, members and non-members of SNEB. So be sure to share with your friends and colleagues who may be interested in learning more about SNEB and the work of the divisions. They're invited to attend one of those division meetings. So we hope to see you back online soon. Thank you all.
And Rachel, maybe before we leave, I do believe that we also have a list of nutrition education resources that was compiled by our FNEE partners and that will be distributed to the members, right?
I think you are right. And actually, if you hang on a second, I will drop that in the handout block. Let me make sure I have the right. Oh, okay, nutrition education resources. Oh my gosh, yes, look at all these links. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and, okay. So it's now in the handout tab if you want to download that now, but I'll make sure it's included in the follow-up to the presentation as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for reminding me.
All right, so this brings us to the end. Everybody have a good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great afternoon. Bye.